Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy.
Hey, 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 hey. Welcome back to episode 38 of Something Wrong with the Podcast. It's your boy Julian, and we're going to go right into the music today, guys. I had a fantastic weekend. We can get to that in a bit. I have a few shout outs I need to give, but a lot of things happen in particular to the women in the music industry, not just any women, the titans of women in the music industry. We have white on white crime between Charlie XCX and Taylor Swift. We have our hip hop queens going at it once again, Nicki Minaj and Cardi. Now, I want to start with the hip hop beef, because personally, that's far more interesting to me and it's far more visceral. We'll get to that dog shit Taylor Swift album in a minute. But let's do a quick recap of Cardi and Nicki and how one could get to this current point of contention, which seems to be an endless wheel between the two of them. Nicki had been established, obviously, as an artist long before Cardi. Cardi bursts onto the scene with Bodak Yellow, breaks a bunch of records, is immediately established as a threat. I think that goes without saying. Then there was the issue between Motorsport, when they were both approved for the 2007 Migos song Motorsport. Nicki thought she'd have the verse. Cardi ended up getting the verse. Nicki denied this, but there was clear that the tension was brewing. And then from there, Invasion of Privacy comes out. We're seeing now the unofficial passing of the torch, because obviously Nicki is not relinquishing her throne whatsoever, nor should she. But once you have Cardi performing and elevating to a level like this, winning the rap Grammy Album of the Year, first woman since Lauryn Hill to do so, now Cardi is no longer the new kid on the block. She's a solidified superstar, again, off the strength of this single album. And then we're seeing, you know, shots, disses back and forth over the years. And now we're all caught up to today, which... after Cardi's album release, in the week of promo, she did an episode on Call Her Daddy, where she discussed the conspiracy theory that Nicki always pushes, that Cardi was chosen as an industry plant. And Cardi obviously denies this rumor, but it is something that has, again, one of the many points of contention between the two of them. And then Nicki responds to Cardi's first week sales, as anybody petty does. Cardi did sell 200,000 units, which is incredible. I don't know how Nicki could throw shade at that. That was a chart-topping first week sales, by the way. Nicki threw shade by reposting tweets that claimed she was still the biggest selling female rapper of all of the decade. Pardon me. A few days later, that following day, on September 29th, after announcing her album on Twitter, Nicki released her album date, so 3/27/26, announcing the date of her upcoming album, again, in the spirit of trying to pull attention away from Cardi and preparing her barbs and other music fans for her music. And then the mudslinging really began. Cardi tweeting ABCDEFG, your man has to snatch this pussy. Pussy tastes like honeycomb. Your bro be touching 12-year-olds, referring to Nicki's husband, and I believe brother, who are registered sex offenders. I will say, in the cycle of this beef, I've never liked Nicki Minaj. I've never defended her, nor care to. I really don't even listen to her music. I think she's a grown baby. I do have a soft spot for Cardi. I think Cardi is a classic, you know, went from the strip club, the dancing scene, had done some foul, violent shit in her past. To, you know, survive. And I think I'm not excusing anything that she may have done wrong, but like, I think she's evolved so much as a person. And I think she is really working on being the best version of herself. And so much so that what I love about Cardi is how vulnerable she is about this stuff. Like, she'll say out loud, she'll vocalize how she wants to change and how she's trying to be a better role model for her children. But then at times like that, you know, that urge to lash out and fight back, seemingly, when it comes to Nicki Minaj and her in particular, always seems to win. That urge to hit back seems to always get the best of her when it comes to Nicki. I will say, at least for the time being, the dispute is remains online. Do I think that we are owed this as the public? Do I think that we are owed this back and forth between the two of them? No. I do think as adults, I'd say as mature adults, but I don't think there's an ounce of maturity in Nicki Minaj's existence. I don't think she surrounds herself with mature people. She clearly isn't attracted to mature people. In fact, the people that she's attracted to are interested in prepubescent children. So there's a lot of immaturity in that camp. And it sucks that the artist of the caliber that Nicki is and the artist of the caliber that Cardi is, Cardi has to go down to her level and sling mud in that setting when I truly do believe that Cardi is better than that. I do think Cardi is above that. So I hope that things clear up. There was that leaked call from Cardi B, which wasn't great. This was a quote from the call when she was regarding Ice Spice. She said, "I'm not pussy like Lotto. You think I'm Nicki. I'm a fuck her up," referring to Ice Spice. "All y'all, I'm going to get Riot beat up by my niggas." Riot is her producer, Ice Spice's producer. Any red carpet, any show, any event. So Cardi very much... I mean, that's a threat, to which Ice Spice tweeted like a laughing emoji, like the covering the mouth one. And then Nicki again jumps in and invites the Barbs to chime on, as she always does. She always loves to incite her fan base. Nicki Minaj and Trump have a similar playbook in terms of mobilizing their fan bases to bully others. And I know it sounds like I'm giving Cardi a lot of rope and Nicki a shorter leash, but... history has shown the type of person that Nicki is. I don't think anything of her beyond the accomplishment she has as an artist. I think she is truly just a shitty, terrible person. And I do hope that Cardi, I don't know what it takes in music. Is it you pile on enough accolades and that all of a sudden that person is now below you, or whatever it's going to take for Cardi to turn a blind eye to Nicki's bullshit? Because I think that's what would be best for her. Cardi's just, I'm reading some of these tweets, she's just tweeting up a storm about Nicki, and I don't think this helps anybody, certainly not her children. So hoping that clears up. Again, congrats on the album, Cardi. In more positive women news, Doja Cat smoked it on SNL. I loved her performance. That album is like so fun and very like jazzy and dancey. It's a really fun like disco element in that album. Doja's performance is incredible on SNL. She gets very much in character, and she's just also just a criminally underrated rapper because of the style of music that she makes. Let's go to White on White Crime. We are in the middle of a Taylor Swift and Charlie XCX showdown. And this is because, and for a fan base that I'm sure is not too familiar, there is a song that, well, there's a Charlie XCX has said about Taylor Swift that she was intimidated by her because of how big of a star she is, or something along that line. She didn't say anything that warranted the response that Taylor had said on Actually Romantic, where basically Taylor Swift just says, "Girl, like, you're addicted to coke. But it's like cute that you love me so much," or something like that, which is very odd, because what Charlie said that prompted, you know, Taylor to respond back is just like, so it just seems a little a reach at best. So you could tell Taylor just wanted to throw some shade, which was completely missed. It doesn't seem like the internet's on her side. Certainly doesn't help that the album, The Life of a Showgirl, The Life of a Mid Bitch, that's what this album should be called. That fucking album blows. I'm so happy that she is not doing this like Super Bowl thing or anything of that nature. And I'm not, mind you, because I don't speak much about this music on my platform or even on the old pod. We never talked much about this stuff. I don't hate Taylor Swift. Like, I liked 1989 was a very good album. I think that's great. Even that folklore-y one that she did afterwards, like the last one before this one was like a little more mature and like ethereal, and has the one thing that she's always going to have is great production. But this Life of a Showgirl album I said on the first and only listen, mind you, it sounds like AI slop. Like, it's bubblegum pop AI bullshit. It's obviously super well produced, but the hardest part of this album is the lyrical content of it, which is sad because for years, people have been lifting up Taylor Swift as this, like, the best pen in music. Not only is she one of the best touring artists of all time, but she's also one of the best musical writers of all time. This, the lyrics on this album are embarrassing. I have an 11-year-old niece that I think is more emotionally mature than the shit that, like, you know, Taylor in her mid-30s pushing 40. And again, I'm not age shaming women. I'm just saying your lived life experiences should match the quality of the art that you're putting out. And I understand your target demo may skew younger. Obviously, she makes, like, younger girl music, but, you know, give them shit to age with. Give them music to, like, look forward to when they're, you know, going off to college. This stuff is, it is so bad. There's a couple songs. There's one song where she's just talking about, it's just a bunch of sexual innuendos for Travis's dick. Like, she could tell, like, she listened to, it was like she did her best Sabrina Carpenter impression. What else has she said on this? It's just like, there's no substance. The entire album is vapid. I honestly don't understand what is the creative direction. Like, what are we supposed to learn from the life of a showgirl? The first four or five songs are just straight dog shit. I hated this album so bad. Even like the terms that she says when she's speaking in like hip hop slang and stuff, she says, I forget. I think it's on Canceled. I forget which word she snatched or something like that. It's like even her cool girl rhetoric is like years late. She's just behind the times. It sounds like she phoned in this album, which is sad because you expect a lot from, you know, the biggest selling artist. And this is a far miss after the Tortured Poets Department, which I'm looking at the track list now. And I actually enjoyed quite a bit of that album. But this is such bad music that I hope the public reception, because I'm seeing on the timeline, the general consensus is, yes, this does suck. So I'm glad people are being honest outside of her stands, obviously. But I hope that resonates with her. And this becomes like some sort of a reality check to really maybe get back with Jack Antonoff or lock in with that one producer that knows how to make you create your best art, because this is not it. And by no means do I need another album from Taylor Swift, but this should take some time off. Maybe have to settle down with Travis. Travis is going to retire. You don't need to tour this album. Go have a kid. Do couple shit. You guys are in love. Like, you know what I mean? Have a family. Just take a beat. You certainly don't need the money. That's for damn sure. Yeah. Anyway, in other creative news, I watched, I didn't watch it live, but I watched the SNL return. I mentioned Doja Cat a few minutes ago, but I also watched the skits, the cold open. Mid, the skits themselves are really bad, and I think it's easy to point fingers and place blame on whenever Bad Bunny's on. They always try to catch a broader audience and do a lot of quips or bits in Spanish. Like, there was a ChatGPTO, which was like the Spanish uncle, which that conceptually funny. That one actually was one of the better sketches. But the sketch writing on that show, it's like, it's, I mean, I understand it's episode one. There's like 17 new cast members, but that, it was so bad. It's so like down to the bone that Colin Jost actually had to do a skit. He participated in the cold open, which is so rare. You never see him do stuff like that. It was a bad watch, though. I will say that. I'm happy to see all these new faces. It's cool to see. I like a lot of these comedians. I love Cam Patterson. Obviously, you know, the first time to go from, you know, making videos to going viral on Kill Tony to becoming a regular there and clearly becoming very comfortable on that stage. It's awesome to see him week over week if you're a fan of Kill Tony. And if not, there's plenty of Cam Patterson compilations. You can see how he got better over time. But to go from, you know, the mothership and being very comfortable in a room in Austin to now thrown into welcome to, you know, primetime. You're at the not only on SNL, but your first appearance on SNL is at the Weekend Update between the two, you know, best writers in that building. You're sandwiched in between Colin Jost and Michael Che, and you are direct to cam reading the teleprompter, like trying to hit your marks. There's a few fumbles that he had throughout there of no fault. I mean, that's the nature of it's nerves. I mean, the kid is, this is a huge deal. He just uprooted his life to move to New York and got thrown into, you know, one of the toughest, probably the hardest show in comedy to do on a week to week basis. I'd argue maybe outside of like South Park to whatever extent. Great to see Cam. I love Veronica. Veronica's the little white girl that does those really funny sketches. She was also on the new season of Tires. She was in a couple sketches as well. So I hope for the new cast, but the writing, it's just so, the sketches are bad. Like they just end. Like there's no punch. There's no joke. It's just either Bowen Yang comes out in like a suit, or like it's the gay helicopter, the gay fish, like the gay, you know, it's whatever, insert Bowen Yang as the gay version of whatever they're trying to make fun of. And then like either just they fade to black, or like it's barely an idea. You just walk off stage and then like I guess we clap. So I hope that they get it together, because that was not not a strong debut for the new season. Season 51. There was a joke made that maybe they should have ended it at 50, which I don't agree with, but yeah, we're heading, 51 is off to a shaky start. Speaking of shakiness, I don't know the information. The more information I hear about this, the wilder it gets. There was that story of Mark Sanchez, former NFL quarterback for the New York Jets, most famous for the butt fumble, of him running. I just read up on this right before I started recording here. He jumped into a delivery man's car that he had mistaken for an Uber. Mind you, it was like a loading van. It wasn't like a regular Uber looking car, and got into a physical altercation with a 69-year-old man. And it's quite graphic. The photos I saw of the man who is stable now, but I guess Mark is the one that's in critical condition. But the man in the photos had lacerations that ran from his cheek, I guess, into his neck and actually cut his tongue. So he's having a real difficult time speaking. He's covered in blood. And it was a very physical altercation where it looks like both of them were stabbed, Mark and this gentleman. And the man had the knife on him as for protection for his job. Older man doing, you know, work in an alleyway at night. I don't blame him for wanting that extra level of protection. And obviously he's having a physical bout with a former NFL player. So just not even the age difference, as if that wasn't enough. You're also looking at someone that, you know, was a professional athlete in a very physical sport. It's the news cycle is kind of approaching this one with trepidation, because you see the sexy headline is like, here goes another American city, send in the National Guard, Trump's got to change, like this is what happens in liberal American cities. But then the truth of the story came out, and you're seeing that Mark Sanchez was the aggressor. He was blackout drunk, so much so that he gets into this man's delivery car thinking it's an Uber in an alleyway, which is like, what are you? Very odd situation. We need a lot more information from the story for it to make sense to me. But from what I do know, very happy that the old man is alive, and Mark Sanchez as well. I don't think anyone deserves to die over this stupid squabble. But I would say Sanchez's career of broadcasting or whatever he was doing is over. I mean, he viciously assaulted an old man, and he was completely in the wrong. Really curious to see how this is weaponized politically, because what is a headline of a major crime in a big city with an NFL player? There's got to be some through line here that Fox News is got their finger on the headline, trying to see what makes the most sense for them to bark out. Meanwhile, CNN is probably doing the same deal. And we'll see. Maybe this is a CTE play of sorts. Who knows? Point is, real shitty situation that happened over the weekend. There's also been more and more mass shootings. I'm trying to stay away from the politics a little bit. I'm trying to be a little more lighthearted and positive. In positive political news, I will plug this, proudly plug this. My brother, who is running for governor of New York State, Just did a spot on The Majority Report, which is a amazing show with a former, a girl that I went to college with, a former classmate of mine, Emma Vigeland, and Sam Cedar, who's incredible. I love him too. They did, it's their show. They had my brother on, and they talked a lot about housing and the future of New York and the Democratic Party. It is linked on the Majority Report's YouTube. You can look up Majority Report Antonio Delgado. You'll see the video. It's really well. I'm really happy to make that connection. I connected their producers. I texted Emma, and then they went through in the production process and working on getting him on a few other shows. I really want my brother's, you know, message to get out there. Not so much so that, you know, obviously I want my brother to get as much time on these platforms as possible, but what he's saying is great, and I really do believe in his vision and the future of New York. He was one of the first people to endorse Mamdani, so it'd be really cool if they were able to work together. The person he's running against from the Democratic Party, Hochul, just came around to like softly endorsing Mamdani, or basically just like being like, whatever, I guess he's the person, after Eric Adams stepped down or said he's not running again officially in that weird video that he put out. Yeah, the local politics are ramping up as always, and I'm happy that I'm very lucky to be in a position that I have my brother involved, but also like be in a position to connect him with people that I'm very close with in the scene and get his voice on bigger platforms. So yeah, just keep an eye out for that. I'll continue to plug moments like that as they come in. What else is going on? I cooked a steak for the first time. Not on a grill. I did it in a pan, which may be like, Julian, what are you talking? The first time doing a steak or a grown ass man, which is true. I am a grown ass man, but I always treated steak like it was something I would just buy at a restaurant or in a nice steakhouse, like a guy's dinner vibe with a martini. And like, let's really have a, you know, let's throw back some red meat. Pause. I bought a beautiful, I believe it was like, I don't know how many ounces. I bought it from Trader Joe's. It was a New York strip, and it was beautiful. I brought it home, and I made for the first time, I made a chimichurri sauce, which, what an easy recipe. I actually made it tonight on this chicken breast that I ended up pan searing. But yeah, I did you know, the butter reduction. You glaze the steak itself, and then I, you know, salt and peppered the shit out of it. Did I high heat the pan, you know, kick cook it on each side, do the fat as well. You know, I had the perfect medium rare, which I was nervous about because, again, I just first time doing it. And then drizzled that chimichurri on there. I made some mashed potatoes. Oof, maron. I mean, I made a big turn this year with financially, like, you know, better place, but I also knocked off a bunch of debt, which is honestly has had me in a place. It's funny, I was telling my friends this, when I was like, when I owed a lot of money, I was far less attentive. Like, I wasn't looking at my account. I didn't see how much was coming in nor really going out, which has led to this really bad financial debt problem that I was in. So monthly charges, like your internet, cable, phone bill, things of that nature, or whatever subscriptions I had, would just run up that bill. Everything's on auto pay, and I just wouldn't pay. I would pay it no mind, because in my mind, I'm like, this is already beyond my control. I'm just going to let it rip at the seams. What's the point of me looking into saving at $20 a month or something like that, you know, really like doomsday approach. And then once I took care of a lot of this debt and I had like a clean slate, I looked at it as a, okay, well, why is my Spectrum bill so expensive? Oh, why am I getting charged an additional $40 a month for a landline that I've never had or owned? Well, let me call them and take that off my bill. So like, boom, there you go, saving money there. Oh, and then I'm like, oh, let me look at this Adobe subscription that I have for my Premiere Pro to edit the show and work on the podcast. Oh, I don't know what Adobe stock is. Why am I paying an additional $20 a month for this service that I don't use? Called them, they knocked it off. What I'm saying is, when I had a better picture of what my monthly financial situation was looked like, either in or out expense wise and income wise, I was far more inclined to call these services and reach out to these businesses to negotiate if there were things that I had on my bill that I wasn't using. And it's so funny how these businesses just rely on you setting up these services and then never hitting them up again. Because as soon as I said, like, hey, why am I getting charged for a landline? They're like, yeah, we don't know. And I'm like, it would have been nice if you guys had, you know, sniffed this out and said, hey, he's been paying on this landline for 5 years. It has not been open. Maybe we should like cancel it for him or call him and let him know. So, of course, like the best these companies can do is reverse back 3 months of charges, which is like whatever, better than nothing. But then they also cancel that fee. So I'm rambling about my billing right now. But the point is, it's more about the thought process of now that I am in a better place, I am so much more involved with what that looks like and care more about it. Whereas before, you'd run away. And I think that's applicable to other things in my life as well. I don't think this is like I'm saying it in the context of my my bills, but I mean it in other ways as well. I think that was certainly the case when like even on the old podcast when I was talking about the emotional strain and difficulty it was to go into that studio every day and kind of like go on autopilot and just go through the motions. It was like that spiraling give up thing where it's like, well, this situation is not going to change it for the better. Certainly not for me. So let's just get in this bitch, get the fuck out, and then just like really disassociate once you're in there. It became like a depressive place for me. Like those elevators opening and walking in that studio, like it was sad. So my point is like it's not until you created a new environment or something happens drastic that you no longer have to like, you know, go through those points in your life, whether it's, you know, accruing debt or something bad at work. I guess the point is like, I don't wait for the metaphorical reset button to acknowledge the bad and live in the bad. My therapist has been telling me quite often, because I told him, I was like, I don't lash out. Like, I don't really do that. I don't really honor my anger. And I can be vocal and like boisterous, but he's like, you don't honor your anger when it's warranted. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm pretty non-confrontational. I'd rather just like, you know, not do that. And he was like, but it's human to experience the entire emotional spectrum, but also when it's called upon, give those emotions the grace that they deserve. When you're feeling those things. So I'm also been doing that, not particularly like anything angry, but just also when things are down or if I'm in like a funk or just like in a bad mood or whatever, or good or positive, not everything has to be when stuff's bad. I'm just more present in that thought and in that emotion and giving it the space and time to live it in under it, but then also kind of analyze it in the moment of like, well, what is it about this in particular that makes me feel this way? Or what about, you know, walking by this person's apartment put in this feeling into my gave me the chills or like got my heart racing a little faster. Like let's not just live these things, I'll live them and analyze them at the same time. So that's been my journey. Obviously, outside of that, basketball has been rolling. I played great last week. It was really fun. I had a good friend of mine who actually hadn't played in 2 years. He's a hooper though. Played is really fun to get on the court with some like real good friends. I have a big week this week. I don't think I'll be able to hoop this week. Actually, I have to do this comedy event, which I'm really looking forward to on Tuesday night. Somewhere in the East Village, the day you're listening to this. It's with like Chris DiStefano, the RU Garbage guys, Giannis Pappas, and Kyle Dunnigan. So it should be a lot of fun. We can end this episode with a little bit of politics. I've been following pretty closely the flotilla boats that the Greta Thunberg and co. have been sailing to supply aid into Gaza. And obviously it's a political message as well, just going rogue and sailing in international waters with the threat of Israel looming at all times. They've fired at nearby missiles, done a lot of things to intimidate them and scare them off their mission, but they've stuck it through. Only problem is they got close enough that they have been detained. So here's a little briefing on the current status of Greta. Swedish activist Greta Thunberg has been detained in an Israeli cell where she claims she's being subjected to harsh treatments and cruel sleeping conditions. Greta is reportedly dealing with dehydration due to receiving insufficient amounts of both water and food, as well as rashes on her body from bed bugs in her cot. Another detainee reported seeing Greta dragged by her hair and forced to kiss the Israeli flag. None of that stuff surprises me necessarily. I think my stance. I think how I feel, I bite my tongue quite a bit and I reserve a lot of thoughts, but I'm trying to think about how to do this like productively. I think being aware and knowing what's happening is the ultimate tool, but knowing the reality of a situation, meaning, you know, the Israeli lobby just basically bought TikTok and we're seeing certain emojis getting removed that may represent Palestine. We're seeing people using the word APAC in any capacity, or their comments are getting, you know, taken down if it's tied to talking about American politicians. It's the act of silencing and rewriting. There's that longstanding thing you learn when you're a young kid in history school. History is written by the victors. This isn't anything that has been won. This is a forcing of narrative control. Netanyahu is acutely aware that he's lost a large amount of support from young how Israel and the Israeli state maintains their stronghold is by convincing and perpetuating and telling every incoming generation, hey, here's our trauma, here's our struggle. And that model has rinsed and repeated itself, and it's worked every time until now. Because the voices that have always been marginalized are now being now have a platform to speak out. So what do? You buy the platform where people are speaking out, and you basically just get rid of the content that can brainwash them into seeing the side of the story that you don't want them to see. So I'm not a TikTok user. That doesn't make me any better than anybody, but I understand I'm on Twitter a lot. Twitter is basically talking to like Indian bots all the time, reading just, you know, harmful tweets that are just spreading awful misinformation to create divisiveness. I feel like I say this a lot when I speak on my show, but I think repetition when it comes to this level of messaging is quite good. Get your information from, always try to like go to real sources of journalism, trusted sources, but then also talk to people, have the real conversations. Social media has been such a comfortable space to get an algorithm that is catered towards stuff that you like and continue to feed your ego and like validate your opinion. But now that's even slipping away, where you're just going to be fed stuff that they want you to consume. So get ready for a lot of pro-Israeli propaganda, which you will not be able to avoid. My fear is when things like this happen, you build up a tolerance and there's a numbness to it, and then that numbness just is accepted as the reality. Don't let this become the reality. Continue to speak out, continue to be vocal. Not everybody has to, you know, put on a political, wear the medallion of I'm an expert in politics and go out there and be a champion. But just be aware. I think awareness is what is undervalued here. Not everybody needs to be, you know, the history of this from the 1940s and all that. And yes, all that's true. And if you care to look that up, please do so. And if you already know all the history, then amazing, congrats. But don't make anybody feel lesser than. I think it takes to understand the reality of the situation is to be a human and have the ability to be empathetic. You don't need to understand these 70 years of history that led to this point to know that empathy and just general morality can guide you to see the reality of the situation. So follow that instinct as best you can, and don't let anything you see discourage you or sway you in the opposite direction. Let's end with that. Guys, a hell of a week. I'm big chimichurri guy. Chimichurri Jules over here on the pan. What else? I bought broccolini this week. I'm in love with Trader Joe's, guys. I love grocery shopping. I get like excited to go down there. I'm buying new shit. I bought like little cinnamon sticks. That stuff that women just like hang around their home to make it smell good. I bought one of those. It's in my little bathroom, and my bathroom smells like apple cinnamon, but not in like a fake artificial way. It's like the real wood. It's not like a plug-in thing. It was like $1.29 at checkout. Like, I'm a sucker for all the little shit that Trader Joe's has. What else have I been? I mean, yeah, like I feel like I'm just leaning more into nesting, I think is the correct term, which is fun. And it's fall. I think that's like what you do in the fall is you nest and lean into that's those sort of routine. So I'm happy to fall in line. Haha. All right, everybody. This is episode 38 of Something Wrong with the Podcast. Thank you all once again for tuning in. I love you. Have a great week. Bye bye. Something wrong with the pussy.